What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kinda Funnies, the Conjuring Universe, Cinematic Universe in review. That's right. We are ranking and reviewing every movie in the Conjuring Universe. Cool. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by big old Bathsheba himself, Greg Miller.
That's me puking in your mouth, Tim.
The Nun, Elise Willems.
I'm in this one.
The crooked man, James Willems.
Who thought of this terrible? Apparently, that poem has to do with a guy who was like a lord back then, who was like really, he built roads or something.
And anyway. A crooked cat.
And the old man from Conjuring 2, Nick Scarpino.
All right. Okay. Why? Because I sit in chairs. Is that why? Ladies
and gentlemen, you can watch this show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames or watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. If you want to listen to it, we're there on podcast services. Just search for Kinda Funny Reviews. If you want to help us financially, that would be awesome. You can also get the show ad-free and write in your reviews in haiku form over at patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like James Davis, a.k.a. James Davis Makes on Twitter and all the social media, and Andrew Feisner. Thank you all very much for all of your support. We are brought to you by Upstart and HBO Max, but we're going to talk about that later because right now, guys, we are talking about The Conjuring 2.
Cuckoo
Very
2.
Exciting
One of the best
stuff.
Features in the Cuckoo.
The Tuku is where we're at with this one.
Count Tuku.
Great. Released on June 10th, 2016, my friend James Burke's birthday. Directed by James Wan. James Wan was offered a life-altering amount of money, he said, in order to direct The Fate of the Furious. However, he turned that opportunity down to come back to Cuckoo, baby.
Thank God.
He had to do it. The Conjuring 2, I feel rejuvenated to tell a scary story one more time, he said on Instagram, forever immortalized. Budget of $40 million. Box office of $320.4 million. Now, let me give you a little frame of reference, Greg.
Frame it for me, please.
You know what? I hate trying to think. I'm going to close my eyes. You take the wheel, Tim.
I'm doing it, man. $320.4 million makes this the highest grossing horror film of the year and the second highest grossing horror film overall of all time at the time of release, behind only The Exorcist.
No.
Unless you count Signs or The Sixth Sense, and then it's fourth. So I bring this to the table. Do Signs and Sixth Sense count as horror movies? Because
I say Signs, yes. Nah, Signs is science fiction.
Science fiction.
But it's scary when he puts the knife under the door.
There's a couple spooks in it. Dude, remember that I got scared by the movie Family Man to the point that I didn't want to have kids until I met Jen. But I wouldn't say Family Man is a horror movie, all right? It's terrifying.
But the movie ends with them being like in the house, in the bunker room when everything's shaking and it's like everything's dark. Like it's kind of like a horror movie.
Swing away.
Signs? No, it actually ends with them outside. They defeated the aliens. They found their water was their weakness, remember?
Yeah.
You gave him asthma so his thing was to be close. You gave him the kid coughs and he's like alive and Mel Gibson wasn't a fucking horrible person yet. We were like, yeah!
He gets his baseball bat.
That's one of the disturbing things that happen in horror movies.
can we take a call?
Nick Scarpino from Kinda Funny. What's up?
I think we need to have an intervention here, guys, because I think Greg has had a couple too many Busan coffees this morning. And he's been on the train for a little too long. Greg, I think it's time to get off the train.
This train don't stop till the heart explodes, Nick, all right?
That's an Elton John song, I think.
But anyway, since then, A Quiet Place and both It movies have surpassed it as a horror movie. It won by over double, making $700 million.
Damn.
It one was really good.
It was. It too? What's the word on it too? I never saw it.
It was all right.
Everyone knows that the best part of that whole story is the kid stuff. Like even with the book, everybody knows.
And this is no disrespect to Bill Hader, but it was just, by the time we got here, I was like, seen it.
Yeah.
I love that he had to bring up Bill Hader specifically.
I didn't feel like disrespect for Bill Hader until you made that face afterwards. Where you're like half
That's when you got him. That's when you really laid into the hater.
Runtime of 2 hours and 14 minutes. Unlike the original film, which was filmed with hopes of getting a PG-13 rating, though the studio and filmmakers were ultimately okay with the R rating that they were assigned, the sequel was both written and directed with the intention that it get an R rating, which is what it ended up getting.
It's a big boom. Wow. Confidence. Cojones on James Wan. Wanted to go for it.
He's the best.
What's the take, guys, on Conjuring 2?
I kind of want to not like these movies, but there's just something addicting about them. And I think it's that this movie, by the way, is like beat for beat the exact same movie as the first Conjuring. And it's except instead of having like 15 kids, there's 5 kids and they're all interchangeable. There's one kid that has an old man voice and that's totally fine. I think I keep watching it going like, I'm waiting for these not to be good. But then by the end of them, I go like, I want to watch the next one. I don't know why. And I think it's because he's so good at creating that world and then having it be like a case to solve. And I think having it really rooted with the couple, what's his name, Ed and Lorraine, it's cool. It kind of feels, it never really feels real to me though. I know it's all quote unquote based on true events. I like that they kind of throw that in there to put a little bit more gravity to the situations. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I just like that these feel like really, really, really wonderfully shot episodes of a horror anthology show that keeps me coming back for more. I have some criticisms of them, namely what we just said. One, it's too hard to follow the characters. There's too many characters, specifically in the family. Like, I know that they're supposed to be based on true events, but do we need 15 daughters? Can they all not look the same? I don't
know. You're a hater. We know this.
He's woman blind. Nick is woman blind. The same to him.
I gotta say though, with the kids, I swear there was a moment in this movie where there was a kid that is only in one scene and not in the others.
There's an older boy. I don't know what he was.
This old young boy.
Who the fuck is he?
I don't know.
There's 4 kids total.
There's 4 kids.
The first one's with all the daughters, right? This one's got 2 boys and 2 girls, right?
Yeah, but I swear there's a scene with 5 kids and there's a third boy.
No, there's.
It's hard to follow.
Do the neighbors have a kid?
No. I don't know. I can't remember. And the problem is this: they're all speaking with a British accent. So they all sound exactly the same.
Exactly. also true.
In England, but Jesus Christ, vary it up a little bit. You know.
I was watching this movie and I kept turning to Jen. I'm like, is Lucy saying something in the other room? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? The thing about this one, I you know, obviously, I love The Cuckoo. I'm happy we're doing this. The thing about Conjuring 2 was sitting down to watch it. I remember being like, man, I remember liking this when I saw it, but I don't remember ever thinking about it again. And sat down and watched it and enjoyed it. And then days later, thinking about it, was like, what happened in it again? Because it is so close to Conjuring 1. And then it has notable differences. And I think they, you know, get the MacGuffin of the ghost out way earlier and you understand a bit more of what's going on. But it's totally enjoyable in the moment. But I just afterwards, I'm just like, I walk away and I'm just like whistling Dixie. Yeah. I don't think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, sorry, go ahead, Elise.
Sorry, I was going to say, I had something similar to Greg, which is that the first one was much more memorable to me, and maybe that's because it established the format first. Mm-hmm. But then also, for The Conjuring 2, I found the ghosts more memorable. Like, I remembered the nun, the crooked man,
Bill Wilkins.
But the family paled in comparison a little bit to the family in the first one. So I found that all of those characters...
Why no truck driver?
They just wrote him out before it even started.
Yeah, they just say...
I think that there's also a thing in this. I for some reason just don't love the nun ghost tying into this. And no, I like the ghost. I think she's terrifying, and I think everything they shoot, like when it's the picture and it keeps coming back to the painting, I was like, that's fucking great and terrifying. But just there's such a weird loose connection with how that story is connected with this story that I just feel like it's kind of shoehorned in there. Like I never quite grasped why these two ghosts were tied to each other. I just don't understand that. And I don't think it's ever really perfectly explained.
Well, Valak, right, is just after these, Valak knows that Ed and Lorraine are a threat. And so they came in, they fucked up Amityville. We're going to make sure, you know, we'll lure you across the pond here. If you come here, we're really going to show you don't fuck with us kind of thing.
And that Amityville introduction is so good.
Right. No, that was my thing about it, where I like, you know, again, I know I'm a dork, but as somebody who grew up reading, like, you know, the real ghost stories, and like Hans, I forget his last name now, but like Zimmer. The guy who wrote all these. Zimmer. Yeah, that's what I jumped to now, too, because obviously more current information is just erased. My Hans. It's Hans MacGruber and Zimmerman, right?
Hans MacGruber.
Yeah, exactly. It's the idea that I grew up and I remember, like, the photos they show at the end of her in the red pajamas. Like, I remember reading the books about these and having those images in there. And so at the end of Conjuring 1, when they're like, oh, yeah, we got a thing out in New England, and it was Amityville, I remember getting excited in the way I got excited at the end of Batman Begins. When he's like, we get body armor, they get paid. You do this, and then gives him the card, and he flips it over. I remember like, oh, fuck. And so to have this open with it but not be it, I liked. Because it was like, we'd already had the reboot of Amityville, right, by this point. Like, it was like, how many times can you do that? Ryan Reynolds killed it. We don't need to go back.
Yeah.
Nick Scarpino, kindoffunny.com.
I've never been into horror stuff, right? This has never been my genre. So it's blowing my mind that, like, these things. I remember there's a movie called, like, Amityville, right? These things. Mm-hmm. I had no idea until probably a year ago that, like, Hill House, Amityville, these are things that I guess people who are into hauntings really know, right? These are, like, big folklore things.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hill House.
Is Hill House a real thing? Or is that just the story?
No, it's because
they made like 40 of those movies.
That's a book by the woman that wrote The Lottery.
So that's based on a book. But yeah, so that's Amityville stuff. Yeah.
So Amityville was a real haunting, and all these movies are based on quote unquote real hauntings, right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, not all of them. Isn't it just the Conjuring ones?
Annabelle's not.
Oh no, Annabelle is real. Yeah,
there is an Annabelle doll, but I don't think that there were Annabelle hauntings that resembled the Annabelle stuff. You know, that's definitely out of the realm.
Who's to say?
The most exciting thing about this is that the pace that they're setting with
Shirley
this movie,
Jackson.
Sure.
She wrote.
Oh, okay. Haunting okay. I was like, she Annabelle.
Sorry, I just had a stroke. Sorry.
I like the pace that it's being set here because it goes. You know, we've seen it 100 times. You do the first movie, then the next movie has to be bigger, better. You go abroad.
Not for the Warrens.
That means that Conjuring 3 is going to take place in space.
Oh yeah, let's go, baby.
The Warrens go to hell.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If you put a title card, you know, the Warrens will return at the end of each of these movies, I'd be pumped as I would be.
It's like James Bond.
You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
Well, so that's the thing. Having not seen going forward, now I've not seen any of the remaining movies, and I'm so excited. But no future spoilers. I'm pretty interested. Like, are we not getting the Warrens anymore? Because they're so far only in the Conjuring movies. It's cool to me that I'm like, there's still some question marks. There's some lore that I'm looking forward to how this whole thing connects.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree with what everyone's saying about how this is basically just the first Conjuring again. Though I think some of the criticisms we had of that first one, like especially you, Nick, where it was like, this Annabelle stuff feels like they're just putting it in here to kind of like set up Annabelle. Mm-hmm. I felt like this one was a little bit smoother, maybe still 15, 20 minutes too long, but it felt the Valak stuff felt like it tied more directly to what they were dealing with as the primary villain or whatever, right? As opposed to Annabelle, which doesn't have any sort of, doesn't factor in at all to what they're dealing with in the house, you know?
Yeah, I just don't love the way they set it up. It just, it still feels like they're, I guess as a plot device, I just expect it to be that, like, seeing that scene, being in that scene, which I guess we kind of were, but I don't know. For some reason it was, I know, but I guess for some reason.
I was there, Valak was there.
We were all there. I just feel like it just doesn't, there's no parity between the two ghosts, right? I just didn't understand why this ghost had picked these people across the pond to lure Lorraine there when they could have. I'm like, why wouldn't you, if you really wanted to kill them, why not make it easier and put them and just haunt someone in your backyard?
I think part of just walk over, separating them from their daughter, taking them on unknown terrain. I mean, I can't get into the headspace.
The conditions, I think the conditions, I would say, and this is me defending it, because those are valid concerns. Valak was what? The plan was to go to England and draw the, but like, I feel like if you had to make excuses, it's that there are certain conditions have to be met. The fruit has to be ripe. And the condition in that home allowed for something like that to happen, and the demons can kind of view that, right?
And Wilkins, the spirit of the old man, he had to be susceptible to Valak as well.
There was already a ghost there, ready to get triple ghosted.
That could get manipulated.
Could be manipulated. There was already this kind of broken family dynamic. Like, there was already a lot going on, and I feel like maybe we are not seeing through the demon vision of everything to see just how far.
How all these variables need to line up for Valak to truly sow the wrath.
I guess it's just one of those things where, like, here's what I think when I think about the two demons. I feel like we should have had a Valak movie before this, and then maybe that would
build her up.
Build her up, because she just feels like this. She's supposed to be a lot more important, but the whole movie we're scared of this old man the whole time, and then eventually it's kind of just kind of a weird, hey, gotcha moment at the end, where it's like, it's not that. It's actually this thing that we only saw really for 5 minutes at the beginning of the movie. And then we feel like, oh, like you could tell someone was like, shit, you know, we should probably have a reminder that this bad nun is there somewhere. So they put in a couple scenes here and there at the Newman's house. But I'm more invested in this poor little girl that's being like teleported all around her house, because that's more fascinating to me, and this old man. So I guess I just needed to be beat over the head with them teasing out that it was the nun. And I just didn't understand that. I was like, why does it? It feels like when we're halfway through this movie that there are two different stories happening completely. Mm-hmm. It's not until the third act where they all kind of come together. And then it just doesn't feel validating to me once the nun, it's revealed that the nun is the bad character, like the uber demon. I'm like, it's kind of weird. It wasn't really set up and it didn't feel validating. I mean, granted, I still had a blast watching the whole all that shit happen. I'm like, I fucking think it's scary as shit, but whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you in when it comes to like it feeling like very separate, and like that is the similarity to the first movie that I didn't really vibe with in this one, where the nun stuff does seem very kind of just convenient, where it's like, okay, she kind of is getting these like psychic visions or whatever of the nun, so that's why the nun's related to them and with them the entire time.
If I can chime in, what I've been digging around on the internet is try to find a synopsis of why this happens. And the one that there's a bunch of theories and whatever there, but the idea out there is that the nun isn't haunting either the Amityville people or the England people. She's actually haunting Lorraine. And it's that introduction, and that's why she's doing it and why she puts the thing across the pond to bring him over to kill him on the tree to do the thing.
Totally. And that's what I'm saying is like, it just feels really like weirdly convenient, and it just kind of just distracts from the fact that we have this whole other thing going on. But there's interesting stuff here. So a fact is, all scenes featuring the nun were added during reshoots, replacing the original design of a dark demon with horns. This happened because director James Wan wished to expand the story of Lorraine Warren having her faith questioned. Therefore, he designed the demon to resemble a holy icon. The original design can be seen at the end of the climax when the demon is defeated. Which is interesting, and like I don't think that necessarily changes the plot, because it's still the same thing. It was just the design. But the thing that really got me is the nun stuff is the scariest part of the movie, in the same way that I think the Annabelle stuff in the last one, for some of the times, was the scariest parts of Conjuring 1. Because it's like, that I believe that is a scary thing, and I want more of it. You're like, the painting stuff is so scary, but it also is the thing that makes me like roll my eyes hardest when I see when she walks in and the husband's painting something, and that already seems awkward. And then it reveals that it's the scariest fucking face I've ever seen.
I just woke up this morning and I wanted to paint it. What are you saying?
And then he hangs it up in their room. Like, what the fuck?
Can't have that. And I guess that's my point, right? Is that storyline, to me, it's told in a non-traditional way. That should have been if she's being haunted by this ghost that is then setting her up, that needed to be the whole movie. Why do I care about this other family? Because Ed and Lorraine are the main characters. Who is the main character of this story? And if you can't answer that right off the bat, to me, sometimes that makes the story feel like it's disjointed and disconnected from itself.
And it's MCU does this very effectively, in that Thanos is always in the background. And whatever immediate threat there is, they're building the, like, just how insidious Thanos is.
Yeah,
and then you get to that. So by the time that you get to a movie like Endgame, it feels more like Thanos's story than it does, you know, any protagonist. And so I do think that it does get a little bit muddled, where it's like Valak could have been building in the background as this supreme threat. And then there are all sort of these, you know, whether they would be considered minions or just distractions of these demons in the foreground, and then finally you build to Valak. I mean, I guess I like that it's sort of not that traditional. What I'm describing is what we know and might expect, so this does feel like it deviates a little bit, and that makes it a bit interesting.
If I had to guess, and I have no evidence to support it, but if I had to guess, I would say some of it feels like the people who are making this movie had the same conversation we've been having about what horror movies are, because like kind of like in the first review, we said this movie acknowledges all the tropes, but then it also does them better, right? And so it feels a lot like maybe they had conversations about, okay, well, once you reveal the ghost, the movie becomes considerably less scary. Mm-hmm. So when they were going in to make this, I think part of it maybe it was, well, what if the ghost is the one who's being haunted, right? So you get all those, you get the first wave of fear from the ghost.
The old man.
But then you find out that ghost is just a placeholder for something even more terrifying. Then you can lure the audience again with some more bait with like, now we don't have to reveal this until the very end or
something.
That's
a really good point.
And maybe I'm just stupid because like what you just saying that, I'm like, damn, that's actually brilliant. And that totally makes sense. But there was so much going on. Mm-hmm. That, and there was so, like Nick was saying, there's so many characters that like that doesn't come across as clear. Yeah. Or scare or a ramping of scary things. It's kind of just like once the Crooked Man's introduced, it's like, who the fuck are you? Like, I get that scare was set up early where it's like with the kid having the thing. It's like, okay, there's going to be some scary shit with this. But it's like there's just a lot going on. But again, but it goes to the same thing. Like their characters have the scariest moments when the kid has the little fire truck toy.
Oh, I fucking hate it.
That's like the so clap scary. Moment of this movie to me. It's like it coming back. You see it coming. But it still gets you, man.
Yeah.
But I mean, and again, I think to echo those points, right? There is a fine line between clever and cheap. And sometimes this starts, it just feels like it's unsupported. And they don't really tie in all that well as far as those two characters are concerned. I would have liked to have seen them seed that out. I would have liked to have seen three or four movies from now that the Valak character is in fact the thing that's tying all these ghosts to the mortal realm and torturing these ghosts and pushing that out. But it just felt by the end of it where she had that moment, she just has an epiphany like, hey, if we know this thing's name, then we can use that name to force it out of the house. I'm like, what? Wait, hold on, hold on, let's back up. How do we know this? I didn't go to a spook class back in the day. Like, I guess I slept through Hauntings 101.
Conjuring 1, bro. Conjuring 1, they talked about this, yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Bathsheba.
Bathsheba, I condemn you to hell.
Is that how they part of Bathsheba's name?
Wasn't it like the property records or some shit? I forget.
Well, in this one, she just writes that. She just, I guess, writes that out of the Bible. And like, that's, I guess, okay. So maybe that was just me not paying attention close enough to The Conjuring 1. But I thought that was a kind of a big plot point that they just kind of glossed over. And then she goes, oh, wait a minute. I do know her name. And then thinks to carry her Bible, which was completely destroyed, with her again, which I guess
she always got her Bible with her, though.
Did you guys notice during that whole sequence that she like wakes up and then like when she goes, she's like, where's my daughter? And she's going looking for her, that it spells Valak
on the bookshelf.
Valak's everywhere. No, I watched the movie the first time in theaters, I didn't know to be on the lookout for it. But this time around, it's on the bookshelf. It's on the friendship bracelet. When they go into the kitchen to sit around the table, it's on the wall behind them. It's over on the side of the counter too.
Man, I suck at this. I didn't see any of those.
Was this your first time seeing it, Nick?
This is my first time seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know to look for it. Why would you think Valak's important? Yeah. Look around their house.
What's funny is the first time I watched it,
I would imagine if Valak was important, a screenwriter would do a better job of getting that across. But you're right. I should have to watch a movie three times before I figure out that Valak was everywhere.
But the first time I watched it, I didn't catch the other two. But when it's on the bookshelf, I remember seeing it because it's so prominent. And I remember looking and being like, why the hell would they, like, their names are so clearly Ed and Lorraine. Like, anything we know about them, the letter V is just not involved, right? Yeah. So I remember looking and be like, what? I don't understand what that is. And later in the movie when it's revealed, I was like, whoa, that's crazy that it's the random thing on the bookshelf. Mm-hmm. But that's one of those things where it's kind of like, all right, is that cool?
No, it's not cool. Why would they have a V and A?
They have good spirits around them trying to show, right? They're instruments of God. These are their guardian angels.
That's dumb. Why? Well, none of their names start with a V.
I agree with Nick because this is the kind of thing that a really great director does, which is reading the script and finding points where they can inject more into it, but it's not in the script necessarily. Like, I feel like some of that stuff isn't seated in the script. So if you're thinking about it, yeah, there's no way you're ever going to notice that you should be looking for that stuff on the way through because you don't even know that there's clues out there. No one's told you there's a mystery, right?
I agree with Greg. You have the whole alphabet. You don't pick and choose the letters. You have them all. That's why they have the V.
Thank you. 24 letters.
They have two A's, though. They have two A's. Do they have two of every letter?
The blocks are multi-sided.
Do they have two of every letter?
The blocks are multi-sided with different letters, James.
I think you're making these things up. Yeah, I just feel like this was an attempt to be clever, and this was an attempt to add depth that was just superficial. Greg, it's to put detailed. It in cooking terms, it's like, wow, there's not enough garlic in this. Let's just put some garlic on top of the spaghetti before it goes out. When you needed to really get that into the the gravy right before.
You know, I hear you. I hear you on that. I mean, maybe their daughter is an instrument of God, though. She's making the friendship bracelets. She's got the alphabet blocks.
I mean, I guess I'm going to look at the friendship.
Why would they have a V? There's not a V in their names. Makes no sense.
Why would you have the letters there? What possible? Yeah, because this is what like, when I watch a movie from writing standpoint, I go, what was the motivation of someone putting those letters out? Like when you're a production designer, you go, you have to ask yourself, why would these letters be there? A production designer 101, why would they be there? They're in the background. What a character had to have at some point, if you're doing your job right as a production designer, have a motivation to put these letters up somewhere. And then if I were the director, I'd be like, why is there a V?
The child is an instrument of God. She was being moved to do that. She doesn't understand why she does it. She just does it. She loves it.
Before we rip each other apart, can we confirm that the V letter appears on the bookshelf?
I can see it.
Before Lorraine wakes up in the dream sequence.
Interesting.
Where she has a confrontation with Valak.
So here's what I have from the trivia about the Valak situation. The name of the demon Valak is shown in the Warren house in three locations and appears five times throughout the movie. The first is along the kitchen window in colorful cutout letters right behind Ed Warren. The second is along the edge of the wood kitchen counter in raised letters. They're just to the right of Lorraine when she's at the breakfast table with Ed.
Yeah, I see that
You see them again when she's standing at the sink. The third location is in the family room where Lorraine and her daughter are sitting. In the bookcase are large wooden letters staggered on two shelves. They also appear on the bracelet Judy is making. They appear both during Lorraine's dream and afterwards. This does not say anything about before. So that is interesting.
Because I'm looking at the photo in the kitchen, and it's the V from love, right?
Right, that makes sense.
And then it says Alec for some reason.
Doesn't make any sense.
Don't you guys write Alec on your? It's an old Irish tradition. I mean,
I'll tell you what. I've said it before. Greg, I said it again. I Alec you so hard.
Did Jake and Elwood Blues Brother ever have a rhyme or reason? They were just on a mission from God.
Exactly.
I get it. That was not a very well written movie either, but it's okay.
2000.
Oh, 2000. I mean, it does. Obviously, all this stuff, these are just kind of tropey things, but these are just the kind of stuff that, like, A, I didn't notice, and B, I just wish they had set up the Valak character a little bit more because I think it would have been more validating. Having said all that, I think where this movie really, really does.
Thank you, James.
Sorry, I missed that point, James. What was that?
Don't say
nothing. No one missed anything.
Fair point.
It was a pun.
Okay. Where I think this movie really does excel, though, is that it's fun to watch and it's scary as shit. And there are moments where legitimately I'm like, wow, I'm terrified for this kid or this young, any of the children that are, even the mom in the house, when she has to go down to the water. I'm like, don't go in the water. What are you doing? Why are you going in the water? That's the stupidest thing. Yeah. And that's all that you really have to do.
Can we talk about that? Is that a normal thing? I've never owned property in London, but is that a thing where
I don't want you to go in the basement. It's gross down there. No, I'll go down there. Well, there is 4 feet of standing water here. Well, that's totally normal. I'm sure it's not a huge problem.
Checked out, or is this just normal?
It was the 60s, right? And they were poor.
And there was more water back then.
There are lots of places where people in the 50s and 60s still had like dirt floors in their basements.
Dirt floor is fine. Maybe you're not going to convert it. But I feel like that's bad for a house.
It was 1977. The Conjuring 2.
That would erode the foundation of the house.
Forget everything I said.
Here's who I think the real villain of this whole thing is. Can I tell you guys who the real bad guy is? Sure. The neighbors next door who are doing nothing to help this family out. If I walked in and was like, you have a flood in your basement, I would tell my husband to go over there and at least take a look at the fucking thing. Go down there and take a look at the pipe, honey. Can you figure it out? I'm like, I don't know about plumbing. But
they like allow this scary ass family to stay with them. Like they're the best neighbors of all time.
Then they kicked them out eventually, though. They were like, yeah, we can't do this shit. You got to go.
Because it's the scariest fucking thing ever. I wouldn't deal with these people for a second.
Here's what I like. I'll tell you what I really like about this movie. There's an incident. Creepy stuff starts happening. Mm-hmm. They call the police. The police show up, and then the ghost is like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna scare the police too." And the cops are like, "There's a ghost in this house. We will. If anyone asks, we will tell you 100% that there is a ghost in this house." It's like, yeah, no questions asked. I really like, because any other movie, it's. We didn't see anything or whatever, but nope.
Yeah.
Chair moves across the table, and they're like, "This place is haunted. We gotta go."
And that's something that I appreciate about the Conjuring movies and the James Wan movies specifically, is they do a really good job. And while some of it is a little bit like too foreshadowed, like, this, anytime you see something, you know it's going to scare you later. Like, right, when you see the basement, you're like, something scary is going to happen there. When you see the little dog bell, you're like, something scary is going to happen there. When you see the little tent in the hallway, like, they do a really good job of setting up all of these different moments that you never know when they're going to shoot off, but you know at some point they're going to scare you. And I'd say more often than not, they deliver on those scares. And that is the sign of a successful horror movie, is you see it coming and it still gets you.
Oh, you know? For sure. I think also, like, I mean, the movie does suffer from having way too many things in it. Namely, for whatever reason, what is her name? Not Famke Patenkin. The girl from
Farmiga?
Famke Janssen?
No, the woman
is O'Connor.
No, we're off. We're at the fucking reservation. The woman who's the skeptic, who says no, she was in the Bourne Identity, and I forget her name, but it's something like Famke Janssen. So anyway,
Maria Doyle Kennedy.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Oh, here it is. Frank
Potemkin.
Thank
you.
Mandy Patinkin.
That character, I was like, why are these characters in this? We've already seen police officers be scared by this.
Also,
why is she still?
These are real
people. Also real life.
These are real people. Was kind of a cool thing that I was doing while I was watching the movie, which is the first time I watched it, I was like, come on. What is this, a Coen Brothers film where you just put based on a true story at the beginning? And after I saw the Conjuring 2 the first time, I actually started looking into the Enfield Haunting. So while we were watching it this time, I had that article open and I was like reading stuff while that was happening. And it's really cool. Like, part of it does seem like they said, okay, if we're going to put based on a true story, we're going to at least, it's not going to be starting point and then we go wherever we want to. Like, there were a lot of stuff, that whole interview where they're like sitting on the couch and the girl's doing the like creepy voice. Like, you can hear the audio from that. Like, you can go
in the credits, right?
To the actual audio, and then there's like other stuff on the wiki which has like
the YouTube the interview that they do, like the whole piece where the reporter comes and interviews the cops and interviews the other thing, that is up on YouTube still, that you can go watch the entire piece he did that has all the stuff in it.
I'm not sure if it's this or another paranormal event I'm thinking of, but I'm pretty sure that I think it was this, that it aired as a televised special. And people got so scared watching from home that it was like never aired again. Or maybe
That's a different one that I know about and have watched as well. Okay. Yeah, that was a fake one that they showed as fake, but they acted like it was real and everybody lost
their mind. Got super scared and they were freaking out. Yeah.
So
now, real quick, while we're talking about real life about this, I do want everybody to understand that IGN.com's Simon Cardi is from Enfield. So he could be a ghost and or a demon. We're not sure.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Could be a ghost. Some more real life stuff here. So I really appreciate both Conjuring 1 and this in the credits having all the pictures of the real people and kind of like the sound bites and all that stuff. But some have claimed that the real Janet Hodgkins is a gifted ventriloquist or has the power to manipulate voices. And she admitted to faking some of the events. Mm-hmm. She revealed that around 2% of the haunting was phony during an interview with The Telegraph.
2%. 2% margin. Like, there's a 2% margin of error in every haunting.
I don't know.
It's like, weird.
Yeah. Barrett, right now I'm tossing into Slack to you the YouTube video that is like from the BBC of the like the thing that they then take and make into the movie.
Mm-hmm. I think the reality aspect does add more than it detracts, but I definitely think also this is a movie, right? At no point do I think any of this stuff really happened the way it is happening. But I do think, to James's point, like earlier, I thought it was actually so refreshing when the cops walk in and they get scared too and they walk out.
Yeah.
And at that point I was like, oh man, okay, no one's gonna doubt this because two literal police officers are like, no, we saw it. So the ghost isn't if the ghost isn't too afraid to scare two cops, why would it be afraid to scare these people who want to see it at all? And so that was.
Hold on though, Nick. I love that you're like, if the ghosts aren't, afraid to scare cops, as in ghosts, as if cops mean anything to ghosts.
Why? So they're like, we need to, they set the daughter down in that chair, which, for the love of God, take the wallpaper off the wall.
I know.
Oh, my God. It's like burned. There's human hair in the wallpaper.
That's how the house was in the first one, where the walls were just so decrepit and melting, and it's part of the atmosphere.
New coat of paint. That's the best cure for a ghost.
Anyway, my point is, like, it just felt a little bit weird at the end, where in the midpoint where Ed and Lorraine come, and he's like, well, we need to talk to you about proving that you are real. Why would the ghost not be like, okay, cool, and then all of them fucking levitate? Because we've already seen that this ghost is not, does not give a shit about who he exposes himself to, right? Like, he doesn't care. So why would there even be
But isn't the ghost fucking with Ed and Lorraine? Like, I mean, we have the whole thing of, you know, Ed and Lorraine still, although it's only one scene, wrestling on that talk show with being called liars, right? And that Amityville was fake. I think that if they then want to take time off or, what, you know, cool down or whatever, they come here, you get here, and they can't prove this one's real, even though they want to believe, they know it. Lorraine doesn't trust in herself, right? Valak is wearing her down on that. Again, she's trying to torture Lorraine. She's giving her this vision that Ed's going to die.
I get that, but to me, even just watching this movie, I just don't feel like Ed and Lorraine are the main characters of it. I feel like it's the little girl who's being haunted. And I feel like that's because we spend so much time with her during the whole movie that it just kind of was like a little bit weird that they kind of switched over the narrative and the perspective to them. I think that's, again, that's to me just the story, a little bit of the fault of the storyteller in doing that. Like, it should have, we should have just been with them the whole time and then discovered this house through their eyes. But we've already seen, we as the audience clearly know that this girl's being haunted. So why introduce this element of doubt into it, which I guess then comes into play later where she's like, it made me do the thing. But I'm like, I don't know. It just, a lot of it feels like the story is told a little bit out of order, in that you know what I mean. Like, I feel like we've already seen this poor family be tortured for like 20 minutes of the screen time before the Newmans. Is it Newman? Not Newman.
Newman.
Lorraine Newman is from Saturday Night Live. Warren, thank you. I keep saying Lorraine Newman, and my wife's like, that's not the right word. Those aren't the right two words together. Again, these are minor criticisms. I still had a hell of a lot of fun watching this movie.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just kind of why you pick it apart or whatever. Yeah. Oh, here, Barrett's throwing up right now. You can see these are the neighbors, I believe, across the way. You click through, like, you can see the cops in it and like who the reporter was and stuff. Like, you just jump around.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. The scene where the girl is caught kind of phoning it all, where she's like just messing up the
room. She's throwing
stuff.
The papers, yeah.
It's or that it, plates. I really loved that, because it's like it got me, where I was just like, what is she doing? Like, why would she do this? And like the reveal of them leaving and her kind of like breaking down, being like, I had to do it. Like so they're gonna kill everyone. It's a sign of like the story won me over, where like it beat me, where I'm like, oh shit, you got me. I didn't see that coming. And I was like, why would she do this? And that's a perfect explanation for all of it to work. And I love that then turns this movie into a, I didn't expect The Conjuring to have a get hype moment. But when Ed is like, I'm fucking sacrificing myself. We know he's going to die, but he's like, I'm doing it anyways. I'm like, you don't need to be an action star right now.
Someone's got
to
drain this basement. And he runs down there.
I'm curious how you all feel, because there are moments like Ed playing the guitar, it's very obvious that they're selling a love story.
Don't you love Ed? Yeah.
And the thing is, I feel like under any other circumstance, I would hate that. I would hate that they're trying to shovel this love story between them down our throats. But I just really like them so much that it's kind of nice. It's kind of a nice moment of levity. And I like Patrick Wilson so much.
Patrick and Vera, man, I really dig their chemistry. Like, I really like them as a couple. And I think that is the, you know, Tim's talking about how they play through the rest of the cuckoo. No spoilers, but I wish we even had more of them. Like, I wish there was more of them, because I do like them so much. And I think even here, where it is that, okay, cool, it's another family with way too many fucking kids and they're haunted. It's like, that's what they're, I feel like the family is so interchangeable. The kids are so interchangeable, but Ed and Lorraine are so great in it. And I think, again, like, it is that idea that in Conjuring 1, they were hook, line, and sinker in, right? And so they want them to play this way, that like they want to believe, but they can't believe it, and their hearts are broken when they get this video of the girl breaking the stuff. I'm not saying it makes perfect sense or anything. I think it's just trying to give you another haunting, but not have it be as exactly the same as we're making it out to be, I think, for Conjuring.
Was I the only one who was like, hey, cool, thanks for that song. Now, could you solve this fucking haunting?
Hey, Nick.
That's haunting us?
What if they're trying to show us that they're not just about the ghosts, they're also compassionate people?
I just feel like if I hadn't slept in 45 days, because every time I was waking up in a living hell, I'd be like, fuck Elvis.
He needs the music, man. They stole the music. They literally stole the music.
I think that Patrick Wilson should be allowed to audition for other films in the films that he's in. And I feel like he should be allowed to audition for an Elvis biopic while he's making another movie.
I don't see why not.
But this is the extension, because even Conjuring 1 has that whole, we discussed it, where he's like, you know, just saw your car had a flat tire, so I decided to change the manifold on it. Like, he's like, I picked up some old, like, he like kind of like rolls up, he likes to roll up his sleeves because he doesn't have magic powers.
Man.
He doesn't have magic powers. But his power is like he's the Rock, right?
Well, because they're also not seeking to con people. Like, they're not the people who go, this house.
That's exactly what a con artist would do.
But I think the it's like, she will heal the ghost. He will heal the family. And so I found this to be that kind of like, that's the parallel moment for this. You know? Yeah.
I get what they were going for, but it just seems like he gets oddly familiar a little too quickly with all these families, to the point where if I were the mom, I'd pull him aside and be like, have you heard of the word boundary? Could we have a boundary? Also, have you seen the state of the wall behind the chair? If you're going to help, start there. Peel the burnt skin off the wall. put some paint on it, you know?
Something that always rests heavy on me in these situations is when the little girl is speaking in tongues and her voice sounds like she's been chain smoking and drinking raw eggs and vodka for 35 years. And she does this voice and then everyone says, maybe she's faking it. But I'm like, how could her vocal cords have made those sounds?
Water in her mouth, but she might have spit it out when you weren't paying attention and none of us heard it. And then she put more water in her mouth.
That is always such a pain point for me. I'm like, I don't know that any human could make those noises, and you're speculating that a little girl can make.
Well, you got to watch the actual clip from the interview, because.
Also curious how everyone felt about, and it, now seeing it a few years later, the Crooked Man, great in concept, but of course that CG.
Doesn't age great.
You know what's weird about it is, again, this was the last one I actually saw in theaters. And I remember even when it happened, feeling a little off-put by the CG. I do think it misses the mark. I don't think that it's bad CG. I think it's how they intended it to look. I just think, because it's kind of off-putting. It feels like frames are missing.
Well, it feels, so when it first pops and the dog transforms, like, that's really cool. Like, the silhouetted, like, playing with your perspective kind of thing. I think part of it is he kind of does, like, it's me, the Crooked Man, like that. And I'm like, that's something Jack Skellington would do, you know, like, right before he sang to me.
When it happened, I'm right there with you. When it happened in this movie, I was like, wait, was this 3D? Like, were they trying to do, like, an IMAX 3D thing? And I was like, wait, no, that's awesome.
So it has a little presentation issues for sure.
Yeah, but I think the sad thing about that is that I think some of the other effects that they do, either practically or a little bit more subtle, really work. The zoetrope or whatever the machine is, that where it's going around and you see the Crooked Man, and then when he disappears, you're like, fuck, where did he go? Where is he? That works for me. And then obviously just the simple tried and true use of silence that he does in these in these movies is so well done. When he when the fire truck thing goes in there and then it goes dead quiet, and you're like, that fucking thing is gonna come back out. Tim, I know it's coming back out.
Man.
And then you hear it again, you don't see it, and you're like, okay, maybe it's not gonna come back. And then it comes back out. At that point, I'd kick it, jump out the window. I'm done.
But it takes a little longer than you expect it to come back.
Yeah.
The fire truck. It should have been Doug Jones, the Crooked Man. I said it. It's brave.
Wow. What a brave statement.
But the use of silence, you're right, Nick. It's like, that's what makes this so good. And like, even the first movie had such great use of just staying on a shot and like a little uncomfortably long before it went away. And it's like, that alone is scary. And it's like nothing happened, but it's just scary. And we have a moment in this one where like that happens in the room, and when they put up all the crosses, the imagery is just so good, and they make such good use of it. When the crosses all turn upside down, that's scary. And it's like, that's a perfect example of something that shouldn't be. It's so easy, it's so obvious, but then seeing it, it's unsettling. It's like, damn, like these guys are fucked. And that's the other thing is like the Conjuring movies continue to go on. They're not fucked. Like the casualty rate is so low.
Does anyone die in this?
No.
Yeah, no. I don't think anyone. Did anyone die in the first one?
No.
Is the only casualty, I guess.
I mean, yeah, the Annabelle had a lot of unnecessary casualties.
Oh, right. Well, the Annabelle movies, I think, I just don't think they're as well done as these. And I don't
but
think
there's a lot of well done horror movies, ladies and gentlemen, that you can watch using HBO Max. As we all know, Halloween is going to look a little different this year. I'm so sorry to Blessing, whose favorite Halloween or favorite holiday is Halloween. But as we continue to adhere to social distancing guidelines, you can still keep the Halloween spirit alive. We've partnered with HBO Max this Halloween season to bring you a whole bunch of very cool stuff. HBO Max has so many classic Halloween films now streaming, like The Haunting, Night of the Living Dead, and The Curse of Frankenstein. But also, they got a lot of new, really cool stuff, like The Invisible Man, which I really loved, that came out earlier this year, Us, Ready or Not, or It Chapter 2, which we were talking about earlier. HBO Max has so many Halloween films now streaming, from bone-chilling scares to family favorite moments. HBO Max's vast library is here to serve up some jumps, screams, and fun. Check it out at bit.ly/HBO Max kinda. That's bit.ly/HBO Max kinda. bit.ly.com/HBO Max kinda. And also shout out to Upstart. During these economically turbulent times, everyone is looking for a way to feel more financially secure. So if you're still needlessly throwing money every month at high interest credit card debt, it's time you checked out Upstart, the revolutionary online lending platform that knows you're more than just a credit score. Now's the time to find out how low your Upstart rate can be to help pay off high interest credit card debt. Unlike other lenders, Upstart can reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. One of my really good friends has been having a lot of credit issues. Upstart allowed him to consolidate all of it into just one payment a month, and he has now conquered all of that because it was so easy. Upstart makes it fast and simple to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. You can see why Upstart has a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/morning to find out how low your Upstart rate can be. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/morning. Your loan amount will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Not all applicants will qualify for the full amount. One more time, upstart.com/morning. Before we get back into us talking about this, I don't know where Andy is. He was supposed to be on the show.
Hey, he missed another episode?
Yeah, it's getting a little bit ridiculous now.
Could this, have a hard time.
Could this be catching up? Maybe he gets, you know, reprimanded for this.
Is this the one where you guys are finally going to crack the whip on Andy?
I don't know, Greg. What do you think?
You're his boss.
Am I his boss?
I thought Nick
Fuck,
was
am
his,
I his boss.
Boss.
Yeah,
Nick,
who's who is
it? Well, I was under the impression
I thought it was like Tim and then everyone and then like Nick
and
then
below
Andy.
Everyone is Nick and then below that is Andy.
What are we talking about as far as like
who's Andy's boss?
Yeah.
Who's Andy's boss? I don't think Andy has a boss. I'm not even sure Andy doesn't work here anymore.
Is Andy our boss?
Probably.
Oh,
undercover boss.
Oh, wow. Fair, places type.
Fair, can you play Andy's video to see if we can get an update on the situation?
Video. Like, it's pathetic.
Hey, interview crew, it's me, Andy, from Kinda Funny. Wish I could be there with you all reviewing The Conjuring 2, but I'm at Burning Man right now, so I can't be there for the review, but I did end up watching the movie. I did watch The Conjuring 2. What a good, scary movie. One of my favorite entries in the franchise. I had a blast watching it. Just a fun spook fest, you know. Some of my favorite parts in the movie... Well, Janet and Camellia play Ouija, which is one of those cool, scary games from back in your childhood. And I think one of the scarier parts is just how Ouija is spelled. Nick Scarpino, try to spell Ouija for me.
You
can't do it, right? See you next week, everybody.
Her name's Camilla. He called her Camellia.
He brings up an actual good point, though. I will say this.
Ouija board. Dumb spelling.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Ouija is a dumb spelling, and I couldn't tell you because I don't know how to spell it. But I assumed, okay, you've got a Ouija board, right? What does a Ouija board do? It is a porthole to spirits that allows you to spell shit out. What do we need to know? We need to know the name of a ghost in order to take – so I at some point I thought someone was going to be like, hey, how did this whole thing start?
Valid. Oh,
Me and my sister were playing Ouija. Oh, shit. Go get the Ouija board because that's what started this whole thing. That's what opened up the portal to begin with. They paste the thing back together. And Ed's like, oh, anyway. And then it goes V-A-L-L. And it's like KN's. The fucking roof blows off. And
yeah, you do have a good point there.
But that never comes back. It's a setup moment that just never comes back.
I saw it as kind of a... because like we were talking in the first Conjuring, feels very much like Poltergeist. Like they took a lot of reference and beats from Poltergeist. But this one feels like there's taking more from The Exorcist. And in The Exorcist, it all gets kicked off with a Ouija board, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of me felt like maybe it was an homage-y type thing. I mean, I don't know. Ouija boards are just scary in general.
Maybe, but I think that they did such a good job in the first one of saying, hey, there are these relics that get imbued with these like demonic spirits. And I thought they set it up. There was two beats with the Ouija board, right? There's the one where the kids play it. And then we see it again under the bed. And then mom's like, did you guys play with that Ouija board? So I'm like, okay, I'm an 80s kid. They've mentioned it three times. Yeah. Clearly, this is the thing that's going to come back in the third act.
Ouija board in the first act, yeah.
Exactly. It just never comes back.
It's really interesting, too. That's something I was going to bring up later. But like one of the funniest parts about this movie is that in the first one, they establish, yeah, there's a relic that has energy, dark energy. And that's generally the dark energy that allows these things. It gives them power or whatever. And at the end of this movie, the thing Ed takes is the zoetrope of the crooked man.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I think he just takes the things that he, like, that's his payment.
This
like,
is cool.
This is cool. Yeah. I've never seen one of these before.
Take a chair.
He just grabs it and goes, because I don't feel like that artifact was ever, like, really considered the catalyst or anything.
And not in a way that the Warrens would know.
And not
unless there's some off-screen.
He just stubbed his toe on it when he went upstairs one time. Like,
But again, to Elise's point, not any more or less than the fire truck or any of the jump rope or any of the other things that we've seen that are in this or the chair.
How about the dentures Ed finds in the water? You know what I mean? Yeah. After he gets bitten, he's like, oh, it matches.
So I have two questions for you guys. One question is, do any of you think you can spell Ouija?
Yeah.
Yeah, Greg can because he's a freaking genius.
I think I can.
So it's U-I-J-I? No.
Is it Q-U-I-G-I?
No.
It's O-U-I-G-I?
O-U.
O-U-J-I-A? Is that it?
Yeah.
Is it Miss and I?
No.
Is it O-U-I-J-I-A? Damn.
Yep. Elise is the winner. Elise is the winner.
Nice job.
There we go. My second question for you guys is, do you guys think Andy's lying?
Yeah, like, no, I don't think he watched these movies.
Okay.
Ever.
Do you think he went to Burning Man?
Well, I mean,
he hasn't been in the apartment like all week, so I would assume.
Well, because I'm at Burning Man.org right now, and it's saying please visit us during Burn Week, which was August 30th to September 6th. So
he might still be there though.
That was a while ago.
But I do want to read the web page for Burning Man 2020. In 2020, Burning Man will take place in the multiverse. During a time when many are unable to gather in person, something truly wondrous has emerged. Dozens of imaginative universe creators built ever-expanding virtual Burning Man multiverse.
I mean, hold on.
Comprising eight universes, a virtual temple,
and a globally distributed man burn.
I would say by that logic, though, Andy could have gone to Burning Man.
He might be lost
reach
in the
his
multiverse.
Dimension
yeah, yeah.
Or universe until yeah. a different time. So. Yeah.
Man. We're getting crazy here.
I hate all of this.
I was kind of thrown off at how he pronounced the name Camilla wrong.
Yeah.
Called her Camellia.
He's not that smart. A shout out to when, what's her name? Janet puts herself inside the wall, like around like the pipes and the fuse box. Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Well, what's funny is, again, I didn't like that moment, and here's why. Because they're like, holy shit, there's no way she possibly could have gotten herself in that. And then Ed just reaches in and pulls her out real easy. He's like, come here. And then, but they like cut away because they're like,
it's clearly fake.
Yeah, totally fake.
Horror movie we watched a couple months ago where it's like the mother and the daughter. And
if you bring up Insidious again, Elise, I swear to God.
No.
Oh, yeah.
La Llorona?
It
also had to do with people getting inside of walls.
It was really depressing and all one big metaphor for dementia and Alzheimer's. It's really terrible.
I know the one you're talking about. where the mom has Alzheimer's, right?
It was she's about the losing house, it, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. The title is centered on the house, I think.
You might be thinking of The Lodge, which is a different movie that we watched.
Does it have Sinbad in it? The comedian?
The Taking of Deborah Logan.
No, not the movie I'm thinking of.
That's what I'm thinking of. Logan.
Nick, how many Sinbad movies have you seen?
One. I think just there was the one he was in where he was in a house.
You would have seen oh my god, the Christmas
Jingle All the Way.
I've seen Jingle All the Way. Jingle All the Way was just one of those movies that I think everyone loved but me. I was like, cool, Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to revitalize his career as a comedian. He knocked it out of the park in Kindergarten Cop. Stop. You're never going to get better than that. And Nick, if you want better than that, you go Twins, okay?
Nick, how mad would you be if I told you that like Jingle All the Way is my Arnold? Like that's where I like first was introduced to Arnold.
I love Jingle All the Way.
I love it.
It's fantastic.
We're getting off topic. Jingle All the Way, I'll say it every single time it comes up. It's one of the smartest films ever made. It's the story of a upper middle class white man and a working class black man who have the exact same wants, which is to get their son something for Christmas.
Turbo Man.
They both pursue that want to the exact same extent, and at the end of the movie, the black man goes to jail, and the white man is held up by the community on their shoulders as a hero. Just so you know, the movie was smarter than it had any right to be.
Damn, and my brother, that was deep, James.
My parents took us, and I don't remember why, but my brother cried during the movie.
Seems like a him problem.
Glorification of cops, probably.
Maybe.
Oh my god! This would have been such a funnier joke. Tim, can I do a do over? Can you ask
rewind?
Me
how
many,
let's go.
Can you ask me about Sinbad movies? How many Sinbad movies I've seen?
I'll ask you. How many Sinbad movies have you seen?
Only one. House Guest. Boom. That's where the connect is with Sinbad and a movie about a house. Elise.
What? Sorry. The movie we saw was called Relic.
Okay.
That wasn't worth it.
Greg's face.
Greg's at the end of a long week and it's only Tuesday.
I love it. So Greg, what bits do we have here? We got the scariest beastie or whatever.
Elise, hit the song.
Seven syllables.
No, the other one.
Haku and Redditus
moment. About the scariest,
what?
The song about the scariest moment.
Is that Bagu in review? Yeah. Bagu. I don't know.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the podcast within a podcast within a podcast. We have two podcasts within a podcast in what we call Ragu Cuckoo, where we go rad guys in the Conjuring the cinematic universe. At Nick Scarpino, what you got to say before this roller coaster goes up your anus?
Elise, I don't. Well, first off, have fun up there. Second off, Elise, I don't want you to feel bad because I've done hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of in review with Greg, and I had no fucking idea what he was talking about just now.
From now on, so, no.
I have no idea which song he wanted.
It clear. There was no song for this.
Yeah, Batman in review, there's just a million segment podcasts within a podcast now, so I just call out to Andy, do the song, and he just does whatever, and sometimes
he's
nothing.
Talented, but a liar.
I will say, it is funny. I've only had the pleasure of doing a handful of these with you guys thus far, only a few short hours. But I'd never know whether or not something is truly a reoccurring seated bit segment, or if it's just Greg saying, "Now give it to me."
I've observed about equal
of both in what I watch from you guys and what I've also participated in. It's like 50-50 shot whether or not Greg's going to go,
"Yeah,
all right, so hit me with it," and it's going to be something that is. That does exist, or something that has to be made up on the spot.
And it feels good to laugh again, so I'm here for it.
We have two segments. We have Best Scare, and then we have Best Beastie. So right now we have Best Scare. Now, the Best Scare, remember, are unranked. This is not – we don't have to argue with each other. Right now we have on here, again, unranked, but the first one we have from The Conjuring is The Fucking Clap, and then number two, The Girl to Crazy Woman in the Doorway of Annabelle. What is the Best Scare in Conjuring 2?
I have my thoughts because I remember as I was watching it, I was trying to keep an eye out for something I could bring to the table. I don't know if any of them stand up to either of those two moments, but we're not comparing. So I'll just say I did think it was pretty scary, the scene where he's like, "Get out of my house!"
Yeah.
It's like everything seems, there's definitely a ghost, whatever, and then it just goes from silence to, "Get out of my house!" shouting at a little girl.
I mean, for me, it's the nun.
Which part, though? That's my thing, too. I enjoy the entire... Yeah, exactly. The painting. Yeah, I think that's mine, too. Where,
terrifying.
For it to be that the nun infiltrates the Warren's house and the daughter sees it, and she's like, "Mom, who is that? And you turn, and it's just the nun at the end of the hallway, and then she turns into their room, and then you go in there and you trace around, and then runs at her with the painting.
Be honest with you, if I was that daughter, I would be immediately file for emancipation. I'd be like,
she wasn't there. That was a dream that they were forcing Lorraine to have. The daughter did not see.
No future spoilers, Nick. Have you seen any more from her?
No, I have not seen any. I haven't seen any of this series at all.
Okay.
But I just know that if I were the neighbor, I'd be like, we need to take that kid away from this house because this is an abusive place to be. Dad's got a weird relic room that's never locked. You can just go right into it and touch all these things.
Put your tongue on them if you want. They're also never around.
And they're never around. They're always gone. This poor kid is just being abused. I will say that I love that scene with the painting, though. I thought I was – because they did it, the blocking was so good. They put the light right by the painting. So every time she had to go back to turn the light on, it was like within touching range of it. It's so claustrophobic and so just okay, it was very well done.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say real quick, Elise and I were lucky enough, I think it was 2 years ago, to go on the Warner Brothers lot and do – they had a haunted, basically like Universal Halloween Horror Nights. They had a Warner Brothers themed one, and they had the Conjuring.
Oh, they
house.
Had an exorcist church, which was so good.
An exorcist church, but they also had a Conjuring haunted maze house.
Also,
that's cool.
And
that's really
basically
cool.
You went through different sections. So you went into, you were like with a small group. It was like very small, not crowded like those big other ones. And you went into the room that had a bunch of the artifacts, and they're like, don't touch Annabelle or whatever. And then the lights would go off, and then come back on, and the thing would be open, and the doll would be gone. But then the last room that you ended up in, there was a bunch of stuff happening, and they did the thing where there's a painting with something scary on it.
I don't like this.
And then I still don't know how they did it, but hands then come out around the painting. Shit. And then do that, and then someone comes out from running behind the painting and runs it at you.
No, thank you.
So it was really scary.
That's terrifying.
I think it has to be that. I mean, that's the iconic moment of this movie. And like, again, it's one of those ones you kind of see coming, but the twist of it literally running at you, I think gives this the two thumbs
that's
up.
That's the one. That's the one we're putting on there then. All right. So for Conjuring 2, it's the nun to hallway to the painting. Then we get into the actual ranked one, the big one for Ragu Cuckoo, the best beastie. Now, currently we have it as number one, Bathsheba in The Conjuring. Number two, Annabelle's demon in Annabelle. Where do we want to put Valak?
Definitely like above Annabelle.
Yeah, for agreed. Sure above Annabelle. I think maybe number one because Valak was scary.
You know what? I'd go number one. I think that Bathsheba had the scario moment with the clap, but I think that even though we just spent an hour talking about how Valak wasn't set up properly, I still think it was set up better.
I think that's the thing about this one that I wanted to talk about when we started this, and you asked us what do we think. I enjoy this movie. I think it's a little bit forgettable, but I think the scares are scarier than they were in Conjuring 1, but the heart is more with Conjuring 1 for some reason. And I can't marry that exact reason. I think it's what we're talking about. A lot of things are going on. But in terms of the scariest thing, I think just the imagery of Valak as the nun is terrifying, let alone for her then to have taken over Bill's thing. I think it's also awesome at the end when the tapes roll together and you play them together and you find out that Bill is not wanting to participate in this, right? He's an unwilling participant in this. And that Valak had even done that. And then to get Valak upstairs watching, Ed about to die, turn into the real demon in the corner, like, Valak's terrifying, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think I would disagree with you in one regard. I spot on. I just think I do feel like Conjuring 1 had scarier. I think the highs of the scare were way crazier in Conjuring 1. Specifically, the room with the kids is shit that, like, if I'd have seen that when I was a kid, where the girl gets, like, her leg tugged, that was fucking terrifying to me.
Well,
if I'd
have
seen that when I was, like, 10, I'd be traumatized.
This is another one, too, of, like, what we talked about earlier and what we talked about in the Conjuring 1 of, like, once you show the ghost, you're in this weird spot of how you do it. Like, obviously, I think they use effects more here and do different things with it because, I mean, Conjuring 1, again, you want to talk about iconic or whatever. Even when she gets grabbed by the hair and drug around the room in front of everybody, I remember that being such a moment of, like, oh, my God, that now the rules don't even apply at all. Like, the demon's just fucking with them in broad day. Like, this one, like, for when Janet's on the ceiling and then gets pushed into the locked room, that I thought was like a cheesy transition, but then in the locked room I found terrifying of her screaming. The mom knows it. She opens the door just that crack. She's like, "Mom," and Bill's hand comes around her mouth. You're like, holy shit, because even the mom hasn't seen a visualization that there's a man in the house before.
Mm-hmm. yeah,
scary stuff. That was scary.
Yeah,
it was scary.
Yeah, I guess for me, like with the, you're right, where it's like once you see the scary thing, it's less scary. And I think this being the second Conjuring movie, third movie in this universe, it's kind of like we're used to the rules a little bit more. Uh-huh. And I feel like Conjuring 1 came out in an era right next to Insidious and some of the other movies that kind of broke the traditional rules. The rule forever was if you're under the blanket, you're safe. Nothing's going to fuck with you there. And I feel like there was an era of movies in the like 2010s that was just like, no. You're not safe there no matter what. And the girls getting pulled off the beds was like an example of that. So then to see it again in this, it kind of just felt like par for the course. It felt like, all right, cool. We know what's going to happen here. So it's, if this was the first time you saw it, it would be super scary. But like having seen it before 2 weeks ago, it's like, yeah, it's, I gotcha, but yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's time to rank the movies in general. Currently, the rankings are number one, The Conjuring, and number two.
Do we not have any haikus in reviews?
Oh, we do. We do.
Elise, hit the song.
Seven syllables in the middle, five for the first and last line. If you have to do it, you don't need to do it. Haikus don't need to rhyme.
They don't.
Haiku.
Neither does the theme, apparently.
It's getting better.
You have to do it. You don't need to do
it. I think by the end of Conjuring in Review, the Cuckoo in Review, I'm going to have it.
We were in the car the other day, and she nailed it. She sang the whole thing.
But we talked through it, though.
You talked through it. Yeah, you talked it out, but then you definitely did get it. You definitely did get it, so... You know it. It's there. It's deep.
It's in the heart. It's in your heart.
It's in the heart.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form. This one comes from Tommy T, who says, I'm the guy that did the clap edit of Elise's haiku and review.
Ooh.
So thank you. Thank you very much for that. He says, shit's flying around. Creepy nun and crooked man. The Warrens got this. They really do,
they
man.
Got it.
Did it, baby. Let's go. Yeah. We got Carlos Jimenez saying, bunch of kids again. No one left room for Jesus. This EU needs condoms.
Jesus.
It is hard, by the way. Like I know they're trying to stay true to the real story, but the hardest thing is the thing that I don't like about it is you just can't – you don't know who's who most of the time. You don't have enough time to sympathize with one of the characters because you can't tell who the hell is being tortured the entire time.
Yeah.
Like the next one, just two kids. Let's take a page out of Poltergeist's book. Two kids and a clown. Done.
I mean, somehow the last Annabelle only had one kid, and I still felt like it might have been too many kids. Mm-hmm. Like
that's fair.
It just like I don't know. Like last movie didn't have that many characters, but still felt like it did somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to see how we continue with this. But Pizza Bagel writes in and says, "Crooked man and nun. The effects here are real fun. It's real spooky, son."
Okay.
It didn't need to rhyme. It didn't need to rhyme, but it did. But it did.
Okay.
It did. So now it is time to rank the Cuckoo. Currently, number one, The Conjuring. Number two, Annabelle. Mm-hmm. Where do we put The Conjuring 2?
I put it right above Annabelle.
Yeah, I put it number two.
I put it number two.
Yeah, I think it's good, but I just
don't Elise, think it's good. Elise, you're looking pretty stressed out. Give me your thoughts.
There's a lot of good, great stuff that I do like about the second one.
I agree, but this doesn't feel like a Dark Knight kind of discussion where it took the platform that the previous movie gave and then just blew all of that out of the water and changed. Now it changes all your expectations. Right. It felt like it was more of the stuff we enjoyed from the first Conjuring.
You're right.
So there we go. Number one, The Conjuring. Number two, The Conjuring 2. And number three, Annabelle. We will be back next week with Batman in Review, where we're doing Catwoman. And then
here we are.
Conjuring in Review, where we are doing Annabelle Creation?
Creation, sure.
Is that correct? Is.
Annabelle Creation, yeah.
Annabelle Creation.
Annabelle, then it goes the nun, then it goes Annabelle 3, right?
Annabelle.
Do you need me to double check this? Maybe?
Comes home?
No. Annabelle comes home is three. Yeah, that's right. That is right. So next week is Annabelle Creation, aka Annabelle 2. Mm-hmm. Until then,
stay spooky.
Thank you.
Nice.
The Warrens will return.